Today's special guest has flown all the way from America to join us here on Entrepreneurs Worldwide. She has scaled a retail business to the level that very few people can only dream of. What was your turnover then? Was
it 1.7 billion.
Do you know what? I read that and I thought, I can't be.
You can't.
That
well,
can't
that's
be
selling
right.
$40 acne kits.
She is the co-founder of American Kiosk Group.
I opened 100 stores 6 months out of every year for the first 5 years we were in business. And then the next 6 months, we picked up our mess. We had carts and kiosks that were 60 to 100 square feet,
yeah,
right?
Great.
That
great.
Did 1.7 million a year.
Wow. A retail organization in multiple countries, which she then went on to sell for a lot of money.
We loved what we did. We loved the people that we worked with, but we received an offer that we couldn't refuse.
She is one of the biggest retail voices now in America, and she's one of only 50 to be chosen. Welcome to Entrepreneurs Worldwide, Linda Johansson-James.
Well, I'm thrilled to be here. Well, you know, Richard, I've been a fan of yours for years, so it's such a thrill to meet you in person.
Thank you. Just you and my mum, who's passed away, so it's only you.
So now I'm the only one left. I love that.
So, okay, let's just dive straight in. You are a true entrepreneur, but not only that, you've scaled multiple businesses, but now you are one of the leading voices in retail in the world. Let's just talk about the business that you sold. So what was American Kiosk Group?
My husband and I had a company called American Kiosk Management. We were the largest owner operators in the world in the common area. We sold a product called Proactive, and we were the only worldwide distributors of Proactive.
What was
an acne skincare product.
Wow.
So you can imagine how difficult that was to sell in the common area of shopping malls and carts and kiosks and pop-up stores. But we learned very early on in our business that in order to be successful, you had to surround yourself with people who wanted to be successful. And you had to hire and train people better than you were. So before we sold it, we had over 500 locations in four countries. We hired and trained all the employees. They all worked for us. And then we started the automated retail business where we actually were able to sell product out of an automated retail machine. People call them vending. They're not vending. It's an automated retail machine.
What's the difference?
So the difference is the vending is where you buy Coke and chips and all that stuff. Automated retail is where we educate you with the customer interface on purchasing the product.
Where do those units sit?
Well, we did them in shopping malls where maybe a staffed unit didn't make sense to us, but we didn't want to leave the shopping center. We did them in military bases, airports, store in store with Macy's and HBC. So where a staff location didn't make sense, we could still offer our product. So we had over 1,500 machines as well.
Talk us through the business model of that. What
of automated retail is brilliant.
Okay, but you have to buy those machines, which
won't
come cheap, right?
Yes, they don't come cheap, but you can lease them. There's a lot of different opportunities, so you don't have to outright buy the machines. You can lease them, and there's multiple companies out there that you can lease them from. We happen to be partners with a really great company, and we leased the machines from them. The product was ours, the customer interface, the educational part of it, we worked very closely with them on. So when you walked up to an automated retail machine, it wasn't just purchasing. The screen actually stepped you through the product and what to purchase.
I don't think we have anything like that here.
We're just starting to roll out internationally, which is interesting. Japan has been way ahead. But nowadays, there's all kinds of companies. There's Legos, and Kylie Jenner launched her skincare products in automated retail machines. Now she's in airports. There's all kinds of products now in automated retail.
How do you manage that level of scale?
Well, listen, you have to have a great staff, and you have to partner with a great automated retail company that really helps you with the replenishment and always updating the machine. We sold an acne treatment product, right? So the educational part was really important for us. So that customer interface and the knowledge, we also upsold and cross-sold in those machines. And so today, automated retail is hot. I mean, it's hot. Collectibles, all kinds of industries now are going because there's a challenge in hiring today.
What did you look for in a person that would constitute a classification that person is ideal to work for me?
Listen, it's an art, not a science, hiring people, as we all know, right? You're business owners. You understand that. Yeah. It was about people that were passionate about helping people. You're not in the middle of the mall and see someone with acne and run up to them and say, "Oh my gosh, hey, you come over here." 100%. So what we had to do is train our people how to talk to people when they came up. I mean, acne is a debilitating disease.
It's horrendous.
And we had people that came back to us every 60 days to purchase their product. They could get it cheaper online, but guess why they came to us? Because of the people that we had working with us. So we gave our people in today's environment, and even back then, it's about how you treat your people, right? You treat your people better than your customers. And I don't mean that you don't treat your customers well, but those are the people that interact with your customers, right? So if we train, we train them properly on how to care about people and to teach people that you treat every person that walks through that door, that walks in your salon, that walks up to your machine, you treat them like you would your grandmother.
So did you create a family environment, and how were you keeping that unit close?
We don't lead from an ivory tower. We are boots on the ground. One of the greatest mentors I ever had, Jack Welch, you know, reading all of his books, he said, walk the manufacturing floor. As a co-owner and the COO, I spent 80% of my time in the field. Not because I wanted to catch them doing something wrong, but I wanted them to know that I knew how to sell, how to talk to our customers. And I trained them by what? Being an example. I totally believe that it starts from the top down, not the bottom up in business.
What makes a good salesperson?
People stayed with us an average of 17 years working in the common area in a shopping center. And guess why? It's not because they grew up saying, "Mom, guess what? I'm going to work a cart in the middle of the mall when I grow up, or a kiosk," but because they were passionate and dedicated, not only about helping our customers, but because we relish them like they were our family.
That's right. Also, Linda, you have to pay them, right?
You do have to pay them, right? Listen, people today don't look at retail as a career anymore, right?
No.
They look at it that I'm going to do this until something else comes along.
100%.
They probably do it in your business too. But a hairdresser is a career, right?
I think less so in mine. Well, the cream always rises to the top. My ex-father-in-law, for example, rose to become CEO of one of the biggest department store chains in the UK.
Wow.
They were in the suburbs, called Alders.
Well,
he started that from sweeping the floor in the warehouse in the days when you could.
And I think that we're not doing enough to help our younger people. We always complain, Gen Z, they don't like to work. They don't like to do this. Alpha generation. Nobody does. It's not about generations. People don't take a job and say, "I'm going to be crappy at it." They take a job because they want to be successful, whether it's part-time or full-time. And we have to help them be successful by continuing to train them, to motivate them, to help them be successful.
I echo everything you say, which is why I still have the largest privately owned business in the UK 33 years later, and we're still hugely relevant. And a lot of our staff have stayed.
Yes.
All of them have stayed. Our retention is as high as yours.
I love it.
But it's one thing doing it in one place.
Yes.
Where, you know, I'm in and out and my ex-wife is in and out all the time. So we're still there to hold their hands. But you've done it on a on a huge scale. And that is what is so impressive, that you've managed to get that, keep that culture when these people are all over America. In fact, they're all over the world.
Well, they're all over the world.
America is very entrepreneurial. There's a go-getting culture. I worked there. I've witnessed it myself. Then you go to Britain and you'll get a very different type of attitude.
So let me tell you something. I had a really hard time when we opened up in Montreal, Canada, because everybody spoke French and I didn't speak French. So we had to translate everything into French. And they were much more well-coiffed than I was. Right. So I had to learn how to treat them the way they wanted to be treated using my culture. Maybe I couldn't be as goofy as I am in the U.S. because I really am goofy and I love to have fun when I work, but they weren't quite that way. They found it a bit offensive. So I had to be a little bit more reserved, which people are going to say, "No, you weren't." But I was. You can tell I'm really reserved, can't you? We did all kinds of training videos. We had weekly calls. We had regional managers. Their sole job was to be in the field. It wasn't to sit in their office and do reporting. It was to be out in the field to coach, teach, and train. So that was their job.
They're effectively constantly territory managers.
Yes, but they were out in the field all the time. Okay. Most territory managers, if you talk to retail territory, they're not out in the field 90% of the time. They're doing reports. They're sitting providing all this stuff to the ivory tower. The people that work the shop floor pay our paychecks. So I used to require all my corporate staff, they had to go out and work the field.
How many staff did you have at its peak?
2,000.
2,000. Wow. And how many countries were you in, did you
Four.
Say? Four countries that you were in.
Australia, and how many, America, how many?
Australia, New Zealand, US, and
so
Canada.
So how many outlets was it? How many?
500.
500.
At our height.
So what was your turnover then? Was
it 1.7 billion.
Do you know what? I read that and I thought, I can't be.
You can't. That well, can't that's be selling right. $40 acne kits.
How is that possible?
1.7 billion, I have to say. I'm going to give you another round of applause there. That's absolutely
so it wasn't. So it wasn't me. It was the people out in the field. But here's the deal. So I'll tell you a story, if I may. So in 2008 and, you know, 7 and 8, when the Great Recession hit and everybody was closing stores everywhere, worldwide, we weren't. And the shopping center developers came to me and said, Linda, why is everybody else closing stores and you're not? Why aren't you complaining about the traffic in the mall? And I said, because I don't depend on you for my traffic. We drive our own traffic. We have such a rich loyalty program and such commitment to our customers that we literally call them every week to see how they're doing. How's it working for you? Is there anything we can do? And even so we did that before the great AI rich loyalty programs they have today that are already, you know, in Shopify and all of that. But we did it the old recipe card file way, you know, how your grandmothers do. So we'd call them 2 days after they bought it. Then we'd move it to the next week, then the next week. And we literally drove our own traffic. So I told them, I said, maybe you should be paying me for all the traffic
absolutely.
I'm driving.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And that is one sales 101. Is look after your customer after the sale. Because so many salespeople sell and then it goes silent. Or they sell and they do a little bit of effort after and they're never consistent.
I still believe in the personal touch.
I do too.
Listen, Richard, you're successful because of your personal touch. Look at you did my hair today. I'm so thrilled. but that's what it takes is that personal touch. Yeah. I don't want to get another email or text message from someone about the men's half yearly sale or about something I don't buy. What people today want and customers today want is they want connection, experience, and personalized.
What was the initial contract that you would give the product owner? So obviously you're selling other people's products. Am I correct?
We were just selling. We had one partner and it was Guthy Ranker.
Oh, okay. Guthy
and
Ranker.
And we were the sole distributors.
They were the part. They were.
They were our partner. No, they owned the brand.
Well, correct me.
But we were partners with Proactive.
Correct me if I'm wrong, because I've worked with Guthy Ranker on QVC, right? But I thought Guthy Ranker was essentially selling their wares through QVC and those channels. Yeah.
Exactly. Well, they did. They were the first ones to do subscription model. They were the first in the world.
Right. Yes.
Remember?
Yes.
So they did the monthly subscription. So they owned the online. We didn't sell online back then. And back then, like 22 years ago, it was tiny. So we had the sole ownership of the in-store experience for Proactive globally. We were their only distributor globally.
Brilliant.
So we had, listen, I want you to think about this. We had carts and kiosks that were 60 to 100 square feet, right?
Great.
That did 1.7 million a year.
Wow. Selling one product.
We had multiple products, but it was Proactive.
In the mix.
So we had, when we first started, we only had one kit with three products in it. And then eventually over time, we added like 25 products because Guthy Ranker keep adding products. But it was one brand.
Can I ask what you made on the product?
You mean what our wholesale costs were? They were keystoned.
Okay.
They were keystoned. So because Guthrie Ranker only online, there was only so much we could charge because we couldn't be well over what they were charging, right? Because they wouldn't
volume,
come to us.
You were
but near
total
the end,
volume business.
But near the end, we were selling the product for a lot more than they were. And the owners of Guthrie Ranker, who, by the way, were are brilliant men, and they were such great partners, and we were so blessed to represent Proactive. We changed lives. People who had never been out on a date, who had never been happy about the way they look, because imagine, you can hide a lot if you're overweight, if you have a scar, but your face, you can't hide. And if you have acne, it is... It's brutal. And
I've had it. I know what it's
like.
Oh,
you do?
Yeah, my son had it as well.
See, so you know what it's like. It's terrible. Yeah. Here's the deal. You can have the best product in the world, but the crappiest customer service. And eventually, you're not going to be successful. So quit looking at the P&L, quit looking at all of that, and get your feet in your store and work with your people. Training isn't a one-time thing. It is continual.
Linda, so you've got this fabulous business, this incredible business that finally gets to turning over globally $1.7 billion a year. I mean, that's just insane. Have you got an exit in mind at that point?
Oh my God, no.
Really? You've never had an exit in mind?
No. I think because...
I love that answer.
People say to me, are you going to retire? And I said, why? What would I do?
Well, you sold that company,
well,
right?
We sold that company.
Did somebody just approach you then to buy it?
Yes. So we didn't have an exit strategy. We would have done it for the rest of our lives. My husband and I, fortunately, are still married after working together for 22 years.
Very impressive.
And our offices were attached, but we both had different skill sets, but both had the end in mind, which was we loved what we did. We loved the people that we worked with, but we received an offer that we couldn't refuse.
When did you sell that? In
2017.
I know it's no point me asking you how much you sold it for, but you can tell me if you want to.
Yeah.
No, I think I'd rather not. Funny though.
I know, funny and
but listen, I'm the host. I've got to give it a go.
I love it, yes.
I've got to give it a go. Put it this way. I'm sure you're not poor.
No.
My viewers will not forgive me if I don't ask you that question. But anyway, you can afford an ice cream on a Sunday walk, can't you?
Yes, I can.
So did you feel like almost like a seller's remorse after that? I mean, that was such a part of your life.
It was happy and sad at the same time. Yeah. And my husband, you know, decided to, he says semi-retire, and then he wrote a book.
He takes a year to wind up. You're probably thinking, I can tell you're doing, you're not just
Oh no, I already started IRG before.
So I was going to come onto that international retail group. So you go from an entrepreneur who has this wealth of experience and, you know, built this incredible brand, which you've now sold, and you decide that you want to go out there and start helping people in retail. Talk me through that.
Well, so when we decided to sell the company, I knew I wasn't ready to retire. And so I told my husband, I said, listen, I want to go out there and help brands and entrepreneurs that haven't been in retail. If we were the ones that really set the standard in the common area, pop-ups, you know, pop-ups now are a big buzzword, but we've been doing pop-ups for 20 years before everybody started popping up. And so I felt like I had so much knowledge that I could share with people. So we sold the company in June of 2017. And in May of 2017, I started IRG. And so we were winding down AKM and I was winding up IRG. And so what I do now is I help brands and entrepreneurs to test and launch in retail.
Legal and processes. If you're weak in those areas, it in time will actually possibly, you know, fail the business.
Yes.
When you're at the top, you cannot make errors.
No.
So when you're going, and this is what I was going to ask about the previous company, was what was your legal pack and what was your processes? Because it can't have just been amazing customer service. I get that.
Well, listen, people will tell you that I'm a process queen. I love operations. I love anything to do that. But we had step-by-step, detailed operational manuals. I mean, we had great attorneys, great CPAs. We had a 60-person corporate staff.
But you didn't start with that. that?
When we first started and looking for malls that we wanted to go in, my husband and I would sit at the table and take out the Rand McNally map before we had our little phones so we could say, hey, Siri, take me to whatever, right? And so we would just go and look at malls and see if they fit our brand and our product. And it was my husband and I and one person, Gina, his daughter, who helped us on the back end. We did everything. We went and purchased all the stuff. We went to the banks. We did all the business licensing. We set them up. We hired and trained all the employees. We did all of
Where
that.
Where did you train them? Did you have we some location them that they came
boots
to?
Boots on the ground. We really? Opened, we in trained
the,
them.
Oh, wow.
At the store. Now, listen, I opened 100 stores 6 months out of every year for the first 5 years we were in business. And then the next 6 months we picked up our mess. So when you say, what were your processes? Then we didn't have any. We went through it and then we realized, oh my God, we have 30 stores. We need ops manuals. We need legal manuals. We need to write HR manuals. We need a personnel manual. Yeah. So we did it all while we were doing it. Now my brands are, and the people I work with are lucky enough that they have me, that I have all of that stuff to give them.
You are seriously scaling here at this time. Can you share with our audience some of the mistakes
you've made? Oh my God. We'll go back to AKM. We had all these stores. We were so successful. We had all the staff in place. Well, why not bring on other brands? If you can bake 10 cookies, you can bake a dozen, right? So we thought, well, we can bring in all these brands. We're experts. We already have locations. Audience. Everybody knows us in the shopping center, so we just add more locations. Well, we did a partnership with a food company, and it was June, and they came to us and said, listen, we'd like you to help us open 130 stores. We said, okay, great. What, by like November, December? They said, no, September.
Oh,
God. We said, 130 stores, it's June, and you want them open by September, like 30? No, September 15th. I'm like, oh my God, are we going to train? We know nothing about the food business. These are pop-up stores and inline stores and kiosks and carts in 30 states. We had to negotiate the leases. We had to find spots. We had to hire and train the employees. We knew nothing about food. It was a grand disaster.
Do you feel you were bamboozled into that?
No, slightly. I felt like that I could do it. I was probably a little sarcastic and egotistical and said, listen, we have 500 stores. What's another 130? Yeah. Done this before.
Yeah.
But I didn't know the food brand. I didn't understand it. We didn't understand that.
So what would your advice be to know your brand? What is that key bit of advice to people? Don't go into something that you don't know?
Well, don't know, but be methodical about what you bring onto your brand. If it's something similar, like we brought on Sheer Cover Makeup, right? Because it worked with Proactive.
Of course.
It was a perfect marriage.
Of course.
But skincare and food, we didn't really understand it. But I thought, I've negotiated all these leases. I know what to do.
Yeah, it's also a merger. Yeah. It's a family merger in a way. In
well, but it was a bad mistake.
Was it just too fast?
It was too fast. We didn't understand the business. We didn't have enough time to train. We expected our people to work both locations.
How did
it
you get out of that, Linda?
Well, we had to open, and it was only a four-month stint because it was for the holidays. But it wasn't successful for them. They kind of badmouthed us. We felt terrible about it because we didn't do a good job for them. Where we felt that we let them down and we let ourselves down. First of all, we lost a lot of money. And secondly, we let the brand down. And so what I tell my entrepreneurs today is, listen, what I did 20 years ago is not appropriate today. Today, when you look at opening businesses, let's open one, let's test. Guthy Renker taught us that. Test, right? So do one store. Let's work everything out in the one store. And then when it makes sense and you're making money, then let's add stores, right? So we have to be a little bit more careful today because just of the business climate today,
I watch a lot of retail stores go under based on their maths when they actually negotiate with the landlord. So they negotiate the landlord and they can't actually see necessarily where their sales strategy is. They expect these feet to come in the door because of location.
Yes.
What is the key negotiations that a retail owner needs to set up with the landlord for the actual rental of the premises?
Such a great question. Listen, I've been negotiating leases for 25 years and they're all individual, unfortunately. It's just the way the market works, right? And in the U.S., in your top A malls, they're almost 100% occupied. So there's very little space anymore. So what do you think? It's now you've got prime real estate, and when one store comes open, they can require a lot of money. But listen, as a new brand and entrepreneur, you have to understand your business model. What does your P&L look like? Do you have a P&L? Most of them don't. So we go through P&Ls with them, right? They need to have a P&L. They have to understand how much they can afford. Can you afford to be in an A-plus mall? Maybe you have to go to a strip center, maybe a lifestyle center. So we have to look at what's that percentage of sales, but what is your margin on your product? What are you going to pay your employees?
Now, the first thing that crosses my mind is that I'm a new business. I can't afford you. Every new business would want you.
I work with people depending on what they can afford. And so maybe we do it based on sales. I've taken people so many different ways because I want to help them be successful. But I also know my worth.
You're only going to take them on if you believe in that
brand.
Listen,
I've taken people on that I literally shouldn't have.
What are the mistakes young entrepreneurs make?
Well, first of all, they bite off more than they can chew because they need the money.
And what does that look like? What does that look like?
Well, it looks like that I took on a company when I started IRG. And listen, I was successful for 20 years with AKM. But I'm starting a new company. I'm starting a consultancy, if you will, right? So now I don't own anything. Now I help people be successful. So I had a company from Ireland call me. And they said, listen, Linda, we've heard all about you. We want you to help us open our first restaurant in Las Vegas. I said, listen, I have no idea about the restaurant business. You really should ask someone else. And they said, no, but you know retail. And so this is going to be all about customer services. Now, this is a huge global company. I said, listen, you really don't need me. Anyway, long story short is they convinced me to do it. I took on two partners to help me who understood that industry, right? Who had no money. I had money. So I invested $250,000. The contract was almost done. And they brought in a new CEO who decided to renegotiate the whole contract again. Oh, after 2 years.
That coming, yeah.
I lost $250,000. I lost a big piece of my life. And all because of the name. I wanted the name, right? Even after all these years being successful, I wanted that name. So what I would tell entrepreneurs today is, don't bite off more than you can chew and look at your long-term strategy.
I mean, it's ego, isn't it?
Yeah, of course it is.
And I do think entrepreneurs go through different relationships with their ego until eventually you get to a certain age and it's you're satisfied.
We had a very, very successful young female entrepreneur on the show. And she was saying, it's not necessarily all about the product, we're storytelling.
Yes. And that's just so important. Generations do shop differently. I'm a baby boomer. I like to touch and feel. I want to be in the store, but I also want great service. So if you treat me bad, I won't buy.
But
right?
I'm a dinosaur. I don't like to order anything online. Anything.
Yes. See? Right. Gen Z wants to be in the mall, but not to buy, but to socialize.
I agree.
So if they socialize and you have them in the mall, guess what? It's a perfect experience for them. And do you think they'll buy if they're there? Of course they will. But we've had lots of seminars from Gen Z who say, but if you don't treat me well, I'm going to stand right there with my cell phone and I'm going to go just like this. And I'm going to show you that I'll order online and not from you.
But I don't think our high street, so you talk about the mall, right? That's a way that Americans have been used to shopping for years and years and years. Of course we have malls here, but essentially what has died and is dying and is in grave, grave peril is our high street.
Yes, we have way too many malls. High street has always been where people have gone to shop, but now you build in the outlet centers, you build in shopping centers, right? And that changes it because now people go and spend the day. People think if they build it, they'll come, or if they're there, they'll just continue to come, but they won't. Today's competition is much too heavy and much too strong. So retailers today have to market themselves. And guess where people are? They're on TikTok, they're on Instagram, not Facebook anymore, but if you want to draw people to your store, you have to give them a reason to come. Yeah. You can't just think because you've been there 100 years that in the next 100 years they're going to come, because they're not.
You've written a book called AI for Retail Success.
Here's why I wrote the book. With Sharon G, who used to work for me years ago, is in marketing, has a lot of knowledge about marketing and AI. And she came to me and she said, what are your customers saying all the time? I said, they're asking me what they can do to improve their business. They don't know. And obviously, AI is not going to take over retail. Okay, you're not going to see little robots running around. Maybe after we're dead and gone. But at the end of the day, I kept getting questions from my retailers saying, Linda, what can I do to help my customers better? What can I do to provide better inventory besides people counting, right? Because if you take people off the floor to count inventory, to stock, to do all that, they're not doing what you hired them to do, which is what? To take care of your customers. So AI, we wrote this book, not because I'm a tech expert. Listen, people who know me will laugh. And when I wrote this book, it's, oh my God, Linda, you wrote this? And I said, yeah, but what I give you in this book is a detailed way and companies that you can use to help integrate AI. So from a marketing perspective, from a logistics perspective, from a customer service perspective, from a loyalty. So I tell you the companies that you can contact based on your budget. Because people don't have $1 million to invest in a total AI structure. And by the way, most retailers don't have a plan, or they have a plan, but they haven't implemented it yet. So what I tried to explain in this book is how to implement it on a budget.
You're one of 50 in the world, global retail voices. That is a very small number. What is your family's origins?
Well, my mother, we didn't find out till she was in her 70s that she was 51% Italian. She was a foster child. She grew up in the foster care network, lived in 27 different homes. Oh, she was a brilliant. My mother was the first entrepreneur I knew when women weren't entrepreneurs. So I think that's probably where I got the bite
from. Can you tell us a little bit about that? Just briefly?
She just passed away less than a year ago. And she was the most incredible woman. She was an entrepreneur in the 70s when women...
Doing what?
She started, it was called Dynamic Self-Discoveries, helping people to learn about themselves and do better. She read tarot cards. She did horoscopes. She just wanted to help people to do better. So she did all kinds of seminars before they were even popular. And she just went on from there to do multiple businesses. And she was just an incredible role model.
I really take my hat off to anybody that is trailblazing.
Yes.
It's a trailblazing entrepreneur with no parental, nothing to look back on.
My father was a hard worker, Scandinavian. So I come from hardy stock and we don't give up easy.
Just being financially secure matter to you? Did it matter to you?
Well, of course. I don't have to show off that I have money, right? For me, you have money and it helps me feel secure in myself, right? But it's not who I am. And I'm very blessed to have a great family, have a great husband, great friends. I mean, I'm very blessed that way. So, but I work at it.
Your mother was clearly an incredible woman who had principles, values, and standards.
Yes.
How do you pass that on to your children when they are brought up with money?
It's not about the money we have. Does it make life easier? Yes, it makes life a lot easier. But listen, I was a single mom. Before I met my husband, I was a single mom. I raised my daughter for 12 years. I worked two jobs to support her, and I didn't have a pot to pee in. Literally, I didn't. But what I had was work ethic. For me, I was taught you don't lie, cheat, or steal, okay? You work hard, and what I have doesn't mean you're going to get it. I mean, seriously, I have to work for what you have. Do we make their lives easier? Yes, of course we do. The younger generation doesn't see that they're ever going to make it, that they're going to be able to buy that house or have those children. So we have to help them to see that. Entrepreneurs, we always like to look at that the cup is half full, not half empty. That's just us. Whether we're spending lots of money or not, right? Oh my God, it's going to be fine. It's going to be fine, right? They don't have that same attitude. They just don't.
You are one of 50 retail voices. Now, what is that?
I was shocked. I have to tell you, because the National Retail Federation, which is a global organization of retailers, shopping centers, people who support retail technology, every year they nominate and place 50 global retail voices. And it's really thought leadership and what you're doing to make a difference. You have to be nominated and they choose you. So they had over 350 nominees and they chose 50.
Fantastic.
It was very humbling. Huge. For me.
I always believe success lies in our daily routine. Mm-hmm. What is one thing that you do every day?
I get up at 4:30 in the morning.
What?
Yes. I get up at 4:30 every morning. I make my coffee. I go out and I garden and I feed my hummingbirds, which, by the way, if you believe in hummingbirds, they represent angels. And I have a red-headed hummingbird that has come to my window ever since my mom passed away. Then I go to the gym and I work out for an hour and a half every morning. And then I come home and I write my goals.
You write your goals.
So what time are you writing your goals?
Wow. Yeah, when I get home
every
from the
day?
Gym. It's, yes, every day.
Well, surely that must get very repetitive. That's what worries me about putting, gratitude.
I know, but do you hit them all?
Well, I can't think of enough. That's the trouble.
So you don't have any goals left?
Well, no, I do. But I mean, to write them down, if you keep writing them down every day,
then it'll make it happen. Visualization.
Yeah, so are you writing the same goals down?
No, not every day, because maybe I'm looking for a new client. Maybe I want to hit a new height and
who's told you to do
out.
That? Who's told you to do that? Have you read
my
that?
My mom.
Your mom. That's brilliant.
My mom.
And you've always
did it.
Done it.
Yes. Because she's done it.
So really, you're manifesting.
I am.
You're manifesting what you want.
Do you know who Damon John is?
No.
Shark Tank?
Oh, yes.
Oh, yes.
Shark
yes.
Tank.
Yes, yes.
So he said, if you can write your goals down every morning, but if you don't look at them at night, and cross off the ones that you hit and then move the ones to the next day. So Damon, I'm giving you a shout out here. You have to have goals.
You have to have discipline.
You have to have discipline.
You're on death row.
Oh my God.
Because you've been a very...
I've murdered someone.
Yes, it went wrong.
Okay. With kindness. You've killed someone with kindness.
I killed him with kindness. Okay.
What's your last meal?
Well, if you know me, you know food isn't a big deal for me.
A lot of women say that.
Yeah, it's not. But it's not. Yeah. I mean, I don't really think. But I guess if it was my last meal, what is my favorite? You know what? I'd have to say pepperoni pizza.
Brilliant. Love it.
Yes.
Who's playing? Dolly Parton? Freddie Mercury?
Oh my God, no. Aerosmith.
Oh, wow.
Or the Rolling Stones.
Oh,
yes. God, I'm a rocker.
Are you?
I am too. I am too.
She is by heart.
Yeah, me too.
I'm completely
my
opposite.
I love rock. 60s, 70s.
Yes, absolutely.
Really?
Yeah.
That's right. Just before we go to entrepreneurs, what can you give them to take away? Is there something that you can give them?
Don't be afraid to be an entrepreneur. Don't be afraid to start, because that's what holds most of us back, is being afraid. So be strong, write your goals, and follow through.
Oh, I love that. Damn, I love that. That's great.
Linda, Johansson, James, we have loved this. Where can people find you on your socials? LinkedIn?
LinkedIn. They can find me on my website.
Yeah, which is?
www.irg-retail.com. They can find me on Facebook, on Instagram. I am not on Twitter right now.
Linda, thank you so much
thank
for coming
you.
On Entrepreneurs Worldwide. Thank you.
Thank you.
Can you do us a favor? Can you hit that follow and subscribe button? You can find us anywhere where you get your podcasts on Entrepreneurs Worldwide. And there'll be a new episode every Wednesday at 5 a.m.